the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back. Oh, oh, oh.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison.
Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country podcast. My name is Josh Parcell, founder of College Football Country. Thank you guys so much for listening today. My guest, Barrett Salee from CBSSports.com. He's going to join me to go over over-unders in the Big 12, and I'm super excited to have him on. One of the guys that I really wanted to have all of last year, and it never happened. Never got Barrett on the show, but he is one of the best college football writers around. He's somebody who I've been close with over the years. He's just a tremendous follow and is a terrific read, somebody you want to keep up with all college football season long. So really excited to have Barrett on. Want to apologize real quick for sounding like I was underwater in the last episode with Rossi Three Stacks. Look, technical difficulties, they can happen. We had some problems afterwards that I wasn't aware of during the recording. And I was able to at least salvage it and give you guys a product. So I hope you enjoyed the show. I think it turned out well. And again, don't forget that I'll be going through every conference with an episode. Ross's was the longest. We won't go that long with anybody else, but we'll go through the Big 12, Pac-12, SEC, Big 10. Barrett today covering the Big 12. And then Pac-12 will be Chris Felica from College Game Day, the Bear, some of you guys might know him as. And then to do the Big 10, Kevin McGuire, who is a great college football writer as well with College Football Talk on NBC. And then I will have, to wrap it up with the SEC, Peter Burns from the SEC Network, a good buddy of mine, is going to wrap everything up right before we get the season kicked off. Real quick, shout out to Daily Fantasy for making its return to college football. This podcast has only been around for 1 year, so I started the show after the death of Daily Fantasy for college football, but it's coming back, baby, and you can bet your bottom dollar that I will be talking plenty of college football DFS throughout the season. It'll be included on Friday's show for sure. Guys, if you have not played Daily Fantasy for college football, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. It is so much fun. If you love playing fantasy football in the NFL, just think about that, but 10 times better. I mean, who doesn't love seeing your quarterback for Texas Tech put up 65 fantasy points as he runs up and down the field against Rice? It's so much fun. To me, it's better than fantasy football in the NFL. You got so many more better, higher-powered offenses, more points. That's what fantasy football is all about. You get some random guys. You end up flipping between Alabama, LSU, and Troy and North Texas because you've got your $3,800 running back for North Texas, so you need to help win your pool. That to me makes college football so much fun. It's those obscure players, those random guys that you never even heard of that become household names because of Daily Fantasy. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Rossi Three Stacks is going to give his two cents on that every week. He and I really became to the point of obsession, I think is a fair way to put it, when DFS was around a few years ago. We poured through stats and notes and every update you could possibly imagine all week long, spending way too many hours focusing on trying to build the perfect lineup. I'm going to have a pool. I will definitely have a public league. So if you do want to play Daily Fantasy, we'll do low stakes, maybe $5 or something like that. But I would love for you guys to take part and play in my leagues. I'll have more info on that next week as the season kicks off. Hope you guys enjoy the show. Just thrilled to be able to talk some real football. I've given a lot of thoughts this week on the radio show, if you've been listening on WFNZ, about Ohio State, Maryland, all of the bad stories that have come out of college football. They're important. I mean, they're very important. But from now on, let's just talk football. Let's just talk about the games. Let's have some fun and try to put those, at least as fans, let's try to put those stories behind us and focus on week one. It's going to be an exciting week, and it's going to be an exciting season. I know you guys are ready for it. I am too. I'll be in Tallahassee for the Virginia Tech Florida State game. I'm not crossing my fingers, but we'll see how the Hokies perform in week one. So thanks again for listening. And now let's get to my guest from CBSSports.com,
a guy who, Barrett, before I brought you on, I just introduced the podcast and I said that you were the one guy I wanted to have on all of last season and I never got you. So I'm very glad to be kicking off 2018 on a more positive note with your voice on the podcast, better than mine at least.
I don't know about that, but I appreciate it, Josh.
Yeah, man, excited. So real quick, so where can people find you? Because you're one of the best in the business covering college football. Where can people find you this fall on CBS? Because you guys have a lot of new things going.
Yeah, CBSSports.com and the app. But the new thing is CBS Sports HQ, which is a 24-hour streaming TV channel. It's sports news and highlights without the yelling, basically. And it's on 24/7. It's on our app integrated into our CBS Sports app. On iPhone, Android, Roku, Chromecast, Apple TV, Amazon Fire Stick, all that stuff, CBSSports.com/live. So it's 24/7, 365, and it's I can attest from my own personal experience, college football has cranked up my HQ time quite a bit.
Yeah, you're a busy guy. Well, I know you don't have a lot of time here, so we'll go quickly. Normally, I would go back and forth, give my picks as well, but I really want to keep this about you right now. So I'm just kind of going to get your thoughts on these teams. You guys previewed the Big 12 as well as every other conference on CBS Sports over the last couple weeks. So going through the Big 12, I'm going to start. We'll go worst to first. We'll start with the teams with the lowest win totals. Tell me really quick what you think about them over under their win total. Start with Kansas. And Kansas, the win total is 3, and I actually think the under might be the better play here, but I mean, just give me a quick state of the program with Kansas. I mean, there's how on earth is this team going to win more than 3 games?
I have no idea. Peyton Bender's the starting quarterback, so that's exciting. I mean, I guess you know, Central Michigan at Central Michigan is going to be tough. I honestly don't know how they get to 3.5. I really don't. I mean, Rutgers is, I mean, it's Rutgers, but it's a tough opponent. It's a miserable program. David Beatty has not gotten the job done, and I would imagine he's shown the door rather quickly.
I mean, I think it says everything you need to know about Kansas, that Baylor goes 1-11 last year, and they beat Kansas by 30.
Right?
Like
Baylor was bad last year.
I know. I mean, when you lose by 30 to a 1-11 team, I forgot that had happened. I was doing my research about Kansas. I was like, holy hell. I was like, they lost by 30 points to Baylor, who won one game. That's crazy. So, all right, let's move on. Enough Kansas talk for the rest of the season, to be honest with you. Baylor. Baylor is a team that has a 6th win total. How do you see? Because I think Baylor's going to be much improved, and it sounds like so does Vegas. What do you think about Baylor in year 2 under Matt Rhule?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I have him at 6-6. I love Matt Rhule, the coach. I think, you know, what happened last year, I think, was a product of why he got hired. I mean, he took that big money job, a long-term contract, because he knew this is a massive rebuilding effort. And so I think that he approached last season with that in mind. You know, he tried to do exactly what he wants to do in the future. And if that came at the expense of winning some games, then okay, it is what it is. And so I think this year they're going to be a little bit more comfortable with what he wants to do. They're going to be more comfortable with a style that is a complete 180 from what Art Briles did. They have a fullback now, which is a brand new thing. And so I think this thing and make it work the way it worked at Temp. And do it well. That real. I'm with Vegas. I think the six win total is kind of right where they need to be. I wouldn't bet on it because I just, you know, you can, you know, one bad break here or there. But yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to assume that Baylor's going to make a pretty big step forward.
Well, quickly, the one name who people are going to recognize on this Baylor roster is Jalen Hurd, and he's actually going to be playing receiver for Baylor, which is crazy. I mean, to think about what he went through at Tennessee, was really a great running back for the Vols for so many years, and now he's resurfaced at Baylor. Quickly, I mean, what do you expect to see from him? Is he going to make an impact for Baylor?
Honestly, I have absolutely no idea. I mean, Jalen Hurd as a receiver is one of those things that fascinates me because he is athletic. You know, he is a big body. I would imagine that that he will use that the way an NBA power forward does. But I need to see it. I'm it's one of those things that's fascinating to me because you know, it's if he clicks, man, there's no doubting that dude's athleticism.
I know. It'll be interesting to see how he fares, I think, for Baylor. Because, again, he's probably the only name that, if you ask a casual college football fan to name anybody on Baylor, they may not even know he's on Baylor, but he's at least the name they recognize. All right, quickly, yeah. Texas Tech. Texas Tech's over-under is right around 6. Cliff Kingsbury needs, I think, the over to keep his job. How do you see the Red Raiders shaking out?
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine he needs to hit that over, at least make a bowl game to stay employed. And I just don't see it happening. I think when they did get the running back, obviously after what happened last week. But you know, Trey King, Davion Ward, I think they're okay. McClain Carter was good but not great by Texas Tech standards last year, anyway. You know, when he was in, which wasn't that much, to be honest with you. I mean, I just think when you look at the schedule, when you add in Ole Miss, which I think is going to be a track meet, I don't see how they're going to be competitive in the Big 12. I think the Big 12 will be significantly better and top to bottom than it was last year. And it's going to be tough for Cliff Kingsbury. I think that he tried his best. I don't necessarily think he was in the spot right now where he could be a head coach at a major program, mm-hmm. And at his alma mater, he might have gotten 1 year too many, and this year it'll all come crashing down. I don't see him staying employed.
Yeah, me either. And I look at their schedule, and I see Lamar and Kansas, and I don't see a single other game on their schedule where I'm like, yeah, they're going to win. I mean, they're going to win a few games outside of that, but I mean, they could feasibly go 3-9, 4-8, and it wouldn't shock me. So,
I 100% agree. There's not that many toss-ups either. I mean, there's some games out there where they have to pull the upset just to get to get into a competitive spot.
Yeah, I think Kingsbury's on his way out in Lubbock. How about Iowa State? What do you think about the Cyclones with Matt Campbell? Everybody seems to really like what Matt Campbell is doing for the Cyclones.
Yeah, I like Matt Campbell. I think that Iowa State this year, they just had a bunch of guys suspended too, mostly freshmen. But Iowa State, to me, is one of those teams that it's still hard to be stable. And I think when it comes to what they are going to do this year, I think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see a little regression. It's not to say Matt Campbell can't coach. It's not to say Iowa State can't win. I just think when you have a Big 12 that I think is getting better from the ground up, it's going to be hard. I love David Montgomery. Don't get me wrong. Kyle Kemp, even though he was good last year at times, I think that the book will probably be out on him.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I think Zeb Nolan might be a better player than Kyle Kipton Mitchell. So I love Matt Campbell. I think he's a great coach. I think he has a great future. I just think it's going to be a little bit of a regression this year before he figures out exactly what he wants to do with his guys on campus and builds it the way he wants to build it. He got that contract extension in the offseason. You know, you look up and down. The way their schedule is, I think Iowa is going to be always a tough out. That game was crazy last year. You know, Oklahoma early in the season, you know, even though it's the names, that's tough. They still have to go to TCU. They have to go to Oklahoma State. You know, it's going to be tough for Iowa State this year. I don't think that Matt's going to have the kind of success in 2018 that he had in 2017.
Moving on, we still got some of the big teams to get to. So quickly, Kansas State, they're a team. There's nothing really that jumps off the page at you about the Wildcats this season. They're over under 6.5. People expect them to be an average team. Do you have any sort of feeling one way or the other, or is that pretty much accurate for the Wildcats?
Yeah, it's competitive, yeah. I mean, I have them at 6-6 right now. You know, with the Mississippi State game actually being a pretty big swing game in terms of what their overall record is. I think the one thing that you can look at Kansas State and say, okay, the offensive line by and large is back. And yeah. And that's obviously a big deal because they can move the line of scrimmage, which really, I mean, when it comes to what Kansas State does, I mean, they're the kind of team that comes out there and they beat you up. And so I think that will happen at least a few times this year, but I don't know if they have the dynamic playmakers. I think, again, since the Big 12, I think, is going to be better this year, Kansas State's one of those teams from a talent perspective. They don't have it top to bottom. Bill Snyder's a good coach. I like the fact that they're O-line's back, but I mean, they're always a tough out. But I think beyond that, anything you can say beyond that is a little bit too aggressive.
So I've read your picks for your Big 12 this season, and TCU's the next team up. I have a feeling I know where you're going to go with this one. Over under 7.5, but I think I know exactly where you're headed with the Horned Frogs.
Yeah, I picked TCU to win the conference, at least regular season title, just because I really, really love Sean Robinson. I think that the reports out of Fort Worth are that he's absolutely ready to go. Their playmakers, I think, are just everywhere. And I trust Gary Patterson. I mean, I always trust that defense, even though there's not a lot of familiar faces in terms of offensive firepower and names that are recognizable outside of Kevontae Turpin. I think that the bar that the offense has to reach for TCU isn't as high as other places because of that defense and because Gary Patterson, has proven time and time again that he can be that guy. The Ohio State game's tough. I get that. And that might beat him up a little bit, and having to go to Texas the following week, isn't great. But you look at their road games in conference at Texas, which, okay, they should be favored, but it's going to be tough. But at Kansas and at Baylor, and then then West Virginia on the road as well. You know, two of those games are cakewalks.
Right.
And then West Virginia is a tough place to play. But, defense travels. So I think TCU is going to be really solid this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's higher than I think I'd be on TCU, but you make a good case. We got to fly through these. So West Virginia, I mean, that's a team that kind of everybody's public darling, but Vegas refuses to give West Virginia a lot of love. They have a 7.5 over-under as well. Where do you think the Mountaineers fall in the Big 12 pecking order?
Yeah, I mean, the 7.5 over-under is insane. I think West Virginia is a really good team. I mean, that's printing money if you go over. I think they're a 10-2 football team. I think they're competitive in the Big 12. Like I just said, I think they lose the TCU. That might cost them the Big 12 regular season title. It might cost them a spot in the Big 12 championship game. But when you combine David Fields and with Will Grier and Dana Holgorsen, I mean, that's scary. And then Tony Gibson's a good defensive coordinator, at least by Big 12 standards. So, they're going to be a lot of fun to watch. They're going to be absolutely in the mix in the Big 12. That 7.5 number, I mean, that's crazy. I mean, you should go way over on that.
Yeah, non-conference, you would think the Tennessee game on paper looks tough. They should cakewalk through Tennessee. And then NC State on the road is going to be sneaky one of the games of the year, NC State, West Virginia. That game's going to be thrilling, but it is in Raleigh, so just keep that in mind. But three more teams. Oklahoma State, their over-under is 8. What do you think about the Cowboys post-Mason Rudolph?
Well, here's the thing with Oklahoma State. I mean, if anybody deserves the benefit of the doubt, it's them. I mean, I have them over a little bit. I think I have them at 9-3. Because look, I mean, you got Justice Hill and you've got Mike Gundy. And so you've got a proven system where, you know, you can find receivers and find quarterbacks. I don't care who the quarterback actually is, whether it's Brown or Sanders or somebody else. They have a system. It always works. So I think you can count on Oklahoma State, you know, being in that 8-9 win range, maybe 10 if the ball bounces the right way. They're consistently in the mix. I think it's fair to assume that's going to happen this year, even though obviously losing James Washington and Marcel Ateman stuff, Mike Gundy doesn't get enough credit for what he does and what he can do consistently in terms of replacing stars and replacing guys who are difference makers.
I'm just a little nervous that he got rid of the mullet. I'm worried that that's going to take away some of Oklahoma State's mojo. I'm a little cautious about the post-mullet era in Oklahoma State, but if you say so, I'll trust you on this one.
Yeah, and well, the mullet needs to stay. I mean, that's a staple of college football. It's tragic that it's gone.
I know. It's kind of still there. Like, they made a big deal that it was cut, but it there's still a mullet. It's just not the same, I think, mullet on steroids that it was the last couple years.
Right.
All right, so real quick, Barrett, two more teams. Texas first. Their over-under is 9. I mean, year two under Tom Herman, it sounds like Vegas is ready for them to take that step forward. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly wouldn't bet on that just because it's close. I think I have him at 8-4. Sam Ellinger is the quarterback now. We'll see if that sticks. Tom has been a little, wishy-washy. It does sound like he wants Sam to be the guy, and, maybe it does work out. But, that defense I don't think can be as good. I mean, look, with all the guys that left that defense, I don't think it can be as great as it was last year. So that might be a little bit too much for the offense to make up for when you don't necessarily have guys who you completely trust. I do think Devin DuVernay is a really, really good wide receiver, a nice compliment to some of the other guys they have there. So they'll be competitive. There's no doubt about it. I just It's good. I still think it's a slow build for Texas. They haven't recruited very well until last year. Mm-hmm. So it's going to take a little bit more time for them to be competing in the Big 12.
So the over-under for Oklahoma is 10, and coming off of losing Baker Mayfield, they do replace him with Kyler Murray. I tend to think the Sooners are going to have a huge year, but with the over-under at 10, how do you see the Sooners shaking out?
Don't bet on it, because I've got him at 2. Baker was a legend, right? Like, Baker right. was insane. And Kyler Murray, he's not the passer Baker is. He doesn't have the size. I don't think he has the strength. And if he proves me wrong, great. But I don't see that team being like, look, Oklahoma was susceptible last year, obviously, with Baker Mayfield. They lost a game. So without him, I think that Oklahoma will come back to the pack, even though Rodney Anderson's still there. And even though they got some guys on defense that are growing up, like Caleb Kelly and those guys, I get it. But I think it's one of those things now where the Big 12 will catch up to Oklahoma and Oklahoma will come back to the Big 12 a little bit. Mm-hmm. I still think they get to the Big 12 championship game. I still think they win the Big 12 championship game. But I think this is going to be a year where the Big 12 cannibalizes itself and the Big 12 team is left out.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, when there's a lot of good teams in this league, maybe not a great one. Baird, I wish I could have kept you longer, man. I mean, we went rapid fire through the Big 12, but you did a great job. I appreciate all the help. All right, and that's it for the Big 12. But now moving on to the Pac-12 and combining both of these conferences into one podcast, I'm also going to have Chris Felica on from College Game Day. You know him as the Bear. He came on several times last season, one of the best guests I had all year. He's going to break down everything and anything that is Pac-12 and – look, we know what this league is about. We know it's Washington and everybody else. But Bear has some interesting thoughts on some of the teams in that second and third tier in terms of win total that I think are interesting. So stick around for that. He's great. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Felica. And without further ado, let's get right into it. Let's talk to the Bear. And now I'm so thrilled to welcome back on Chris Felica, the Bear, maybe the best guest of year one. And now, of course, it wasn't long before I had to have him on back for year two. Bear, man, I miss you. How are you?
I miss you, too, as well. I'm glad to hear you're on in Charlotte that regularly. It's good to see, because I know certainly your passion for the sport that we love is great. It's good to see you back in a regular mix now, talking about the sport that you know a hell of a lot about.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I'm just hoping to have anywhere close to the year I had last year. I'm already prepared for the backslide. Last year was an anomaly. We won a lot of games last year, won a little bit of money. So I just have to be careful not to get too big of an ego. But as long as I keep listening to you, I feel like I can't go too wrong.
Well, I was worried about that last year, too, because I was over 60% 2 years ago on the board. I'm like, am I going to be able to hit over 60 again this year? And I wound up hitting over 60 again. So, back-to-back years over 60% on the board. We'll see if we can go for three in a row this year.
The trifecta. So,
exactly right.
What's the best year you've ever had?
I remember, a long time ago. I guess you would know the year very well. 1999, the year that Virginia Tech got to the national championship game.
That's right.
I was a regular with Ian Fitzsimmons at WJOX. In Alabama.
Awesome.
And I had a great year with him. I don't know what my record was, but I know it was one of those white hot type of years. And Ian probably has it written down still somewhere. that was a year that was good. And then 2014, even before we started doing the board, I had Ohio State to win the national title before the year. And then as the year went on, I kind of stayed with him and had him in the playoff as well. Had him in a nice number to win the title. So, I think 2014 was kind of the year where everything kind of started doing this a little bit more on game day, and had some success, but they stuck with it.
Yeah. Well, if you had waited in 2014, if you had waited until after Virginia Tech went into Columbus and knocked them off, you could have really gotten a good price.
Yeah, well, that it was funny because their price initially was like 15 to 1 or 12 to 1, and then Braxton Miller got hurt, and then their price went up to like 40 to 1, which was completely out of whack, and I think they actually went up to around 50 to 1 or 60 to 1 after the Virginia Tech loss. But being that I was already in at 40 to 1, I was like, you know what? I'm good enough. And it just happened to work out that they got that big win over Michigan State, wound up beating Michigan, blew out Wisconsin, and there they were.
That's right. Well, you know what? Really quickly on that note, because I mean, I got to ask you this, first time on the show since everything went down this summer with the Supreme Court legalizing betting, or at least allowing the states to legalize it. I'm sure you've answered this question on some other platforms, but for my listeners, what impact do you think this new legislation is going to have on the sport of college football specifically?
I'm curious to see. I think on the state-by-state basis, how they treated allowing teams to bet on teams in their own state. I know New Jersey is not allowing teams bet on Rutgers, whereas in Mississippi, go ahead, bet on Ole Miss, bet on Mississippi State. We realize you're doing it already. I view it as nothing other than a positive. I view it as more interest, more tax dollars.
Yeah.
I worry a little bit about some bad numbers out there, but that's just part of education. People need to find a better number or just not play. If they're putting up bad numbers and you're laying 115 for a standard bet, just kind of hold out. It's a free market. So I think it's going to be nothing but great, and I think fans will finally be able to back their team and not have to like live in the shadows about it.
Yeah, that's good news for guys like you and me who have already been covering this. So from a media standpoint, hopefully this means that more people might actually be interested in what we have to say. So I think it could be a good thing.
Yeah, I do too. And we always try, I shouldn't say we, but I'm sure you're in the same boat. I always try to present it in such a way where I'm not just giving out a pick. Yeah. I might say I like UMass plus 31.5 today against Mississippi State. But here's why. It's because Mississippi State had a brutal game last week in the SEC. Next week they have Alabama. This is a total look-ahead game where they don't care. It's about staying healthy, resting guys for next week. And that's why there's no way they're going to win this game. Try to give the fan, the average fan, a reason why you might be behind something. Like if you're watching the game and you're like, wow, they're struggling. Oh, yeah, I remember he said this, and that's a reason. So trying to give the casual fan something that they might be interested in as well.
Yeah, I think Colin Cowherd put it really well. He was on Chad Millman's podcast not that long ago, and he was speaking about how he approaches gambling, and he focuses more on the NFL, but he's a type of guy who he says, look, I want to be the average Joe. I want you to be able to relate to me. I want you to feel like, look, I'm not your tout. I'm not the guy who's going to sell you picks or give you winners and stuff. I want to entertain you. If I can help you win, that's great. If I go 3-2 every week, I'm super thrilled. That's, I mean, outstanding from a betting perspective, but yep. I don't want to try to come across as someone who's going to sell you your picks or whatever. So that's always been my approach. I mean, I like to have fun with it. I think it makes the games more interesting. Yeah. I happened to get a lot right last year. I'm well aware that could go south real quickly this year, but it's just fun. I think that's as long as people understand that you're not getting rich off of, very few people at least are getting rich off of betting college football. You know, don't bet more than you're willing to lose, but if you have a little bit extra cash and you want to put something that makes the game more interesting, there's no greater rush, Bear, than sitting there sweating out an over total for Ohio and Western Michigan on a Thursday night. I mean, to me, that's what college football is all about.
Or the 2-point conversion when you're laying 3.5 and they're up 2 and you're looking to go up 4 or whatever. Maybe that's a bad example. That's a key number, but yeah, the all 2-point conversion when you're looking to cut it to a 3-point game or get the lead to 3 is always is a good one as well.
My favorite, I think, are the backdoor covers where you're laying 7.5 and it's a 14-point game with 90 seconds left and you know it's
and
over.
You know it's coming.
And there it's like, here it is. Here comes the prevent defense that just let them go down the field, score the meaningless touchdown with 20 seconds left. That's happened to me far too many times. But you know what? That's part of what makes it fun. As long as you're not putting more money than you're willing to lose, that's part of what makes it fun.
Exactly. Entertainment expense.
Exactly. So, hey, let's talk about the Pac-12. I got you on here to go over under in the Pac-12. We'll go across the whole league. We'll go worst to first, as I've been doing with the other leagues so far. And we'll start with Oregon State. We don't have to spend a lot of time on some of these teams that might not be of much interest. But if you have a strong feeling one way or another, by all means, go in depth, as in-depth as you want. Oregon State is a 2.5 line. Okay, so they are clearly in ultra-rebuilding mode with Jonathan Smith, former quarterback for Oregon State, right around that 1999 time period, actually. And what do you make of this 2.5 win total line? Is there any action here that you like, or is Oregon State just one you stay away from?
Yeah, I'm on Oregon State under. I know it looks like a low number, but This was a horrific team last year. I think it's a crash and burn type year for year one under Jonathan Smith, where next year they'll be better. They'll beat Southern Utah, but they'll be an underdog at Utah State. And then the two weakest Pac-12 opponents that they play, both are on the road. They have Arizona State and Colorado on the road. So they're going to be hard-pressed to get to three. I think that they're going to have to win two Pac-12 games to get to three, and I don't see that happening. I'm under for the Beaver this year.
I mean, last year they got doubled up on average. I mean, they were given negative 23-point-per-game differential. I don't see them taking a huge step forward. It's kind of funny. So they're at 2.5. Kansas is at 3, and I already did the Big 12 with Barrett Salee earlier. And I like the under for Kansas too. It's like these super low totals. It's like sometimes I think Vegas probably, I mean, you can answer this better than I can, but it seems like Vegas is just afraid that they can't go any lower. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, how is this team getting to 3 wins? Like find 3 wins on the schedule. It doesn't seem possible.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I would much rather play under 3, under 2.5, something like that, as opposed to over 11.
Yeah,
because having to be perfect to win the a bet is something that I'm not necessarily a fan of.
Totally agree.
But everyone has that optimism, and all these numbers are shaded to the over to begin with. But that's why a lot of times there is a bit of value with the unders.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that thinking. So move on. Arizona State 4.5. Our old colleague Herm Edwards now taking over for Arizona State. Look, I love Herm. I actually would love to see him succeed at Arizona State. I think he's got a great personality that college kids could really relate to. But everything that's come out of Arizona State so far since he took over has been negative in the media. Now that they're going to actually get to play some games, what do you make of Arizona State in that 4.5 win total?
Is this too crazy to work? Like seriously, is it so crazy that it might actually work? I mean, Herm, I think, is going to get those kids to play. You've worked with him and listened to him and spoken with him. I've worked with him and listened to him and spoken. He is a motivator. I think there's some talent, I think, on that roster. If you look at N'Keal Harry,
yeah,
and Manny Wilkins, it wouldn't surprise me if they got to 5. They get Washington and Stanford from the north, which will be a little tough. Like I said, they get Oregon State at home. UTSA, they get it home. UCLA, they get it home. They could get to 5. I think my heart's probably speaking a little bit here. You're right, Michigan State's a tough non-conference game. At San Diego State is a tough non-conference game. They're not going to win at Washington. Not going to win at UCLA, USC. Not going to win at Oregon. I would say under 4.5, but personally, I'm rooting for them to get to 5. But if you're handing me whatever the price is to make a play one way or another, I'm going under the 4.5, unfortunately, this year.
Yeah, I'll probably stay away from it because of the games that they draw from the north. You said it, Washington and Stanford. You can't get any tougher than that in drawing, getting those games on. Well, I guess Washington's on the road, but then getting even Stanford at home, it's going to be tough for them. And not to mention even USC's on the road. I mean, it's tough for them to find an upset.
And Utah is going to be tough, even though the Utah game is home as well, because you can see, the Utes are always a well-coached team.
Yeah, but N'Keal Harry is probably going to go in the first round of the draft next year. I mean, he's one of the best receivers in the country, a physical freak. I mean, I remember watching that kid at the Under Armour All-American game, or practices even, as a high schooler, and I was just like, are you serious? Like, is this kid's in high school? I mean, he looked like Terrell Owens. I mean, he was so big and so strong and obviously had the speed to go along with it. He's a tremendous talent, and Arizona State has some weapons there. I don't know if this is going to work. I mean, it wasn't great when, he loses Billy Napier right after he gets hired and they lose some other members of that staff. And it was such an awkward PR move afterwards once he was hired and everything that they did in the week that took place after that. But I don't know. I mean, I think Herm can, like you said, he's a motivator. I think he wakes up in the morning and brushes his teeth with Red Bull. I mean, the guy is just so full of energy that's infectious. And you've seen that at least from that standpoint, that type of disposition, you've seen it work in the college level. Dabo Swinney, Tom Herman, Scott Frost, PJ Fleck, like those types of guys can work in college. And Herm's been out of the game for a while. I get it. But I do think that if he can find the right staff and find guys that can it can fill in the gaps that he can't fill in himself, being so far removed from college, I mean, I would like to put faith in him. So we'll see. But I think maybe an under is a fine play there. I don't love the over either. I'll probably stay away from it.
Yeah, exactly. It would be a no play. If I had to play it, I'd play the under. But
right.
But it would be a no play.
Yeah. All right. Well, how about this? So we'll go Colorado. Their over-under is 5 for the Buffaloes. They had a heck of a year a couple years ago. Took a big step back last year, going 5-7, only 2 wins in the Pac-12. Do they bounce back this year?
I think there's a chance that they could get to 6. I mean, 5 looks like the right number for me. Trevon McMillan's there now as well. You got to assume you're going to beat CSU, New Hampshire, and Oregon State at home. They don't have a ton back. I know Montez is back, and they're really going to need McMillan to be the guy at running back. 5 looks like the right number. I mean, Utah's at home, Wazoo's at home, ASU's at home, like I had said. Can they get to 6? It might be tough because you're probably not going to win any of those road games at Nebraska, at USC, at UW, at Arizona, at Cal. I think 5-7, again, is the most likely possibility for CU.
Yeah, the beauty of the Nebraska game is it's early. Are they still kind of working out the kinks with Scott Frost? I mean, you don't know. They're going to be outmanned in that game. But Trevon McMillan's a guy that I watched play for the last couple years at Virginia Tech. And when he played well, he played really well. The problem with McMillan is you never knew which guy was going to show up. I mean, there were games where he'd go for a $1.20, $1.30, whatever. He had a big game, I think, against Miami a couple years ago. It was kind of his coming out party. He's had a few games like that. He's got game-breaking ability, but he just never put it together consistently. And that's kind of why that marriage really ended with him between him and Justin Fuente. If he can somehow put that together for one more run in Colorado, that, I mean, that's a big boost for them. They get those two locks out of conference. Then they got to try to find 4 other wins outside of that. I don't know that they're going to get there either. I actually would play the under, which is crazy because Mike McIntyre, I mean, what was he? He was National Coach of the Year 2 years ago. And now, you know, there was the story that came out right after that that wasn't great, had some off-field concerns. But, I mean, can you remember a coach going from Coach of the Year to – I don't know that he's on the hot seat.
I was going to say, he went from hot seat, is this going to work, to – Coach of the Year, everything kind of went their way that year. The Pac-12 South was in a bit of transition with USC making the coaching staff changes, and UCLA had a bad year. Everything kind of went right. They won a bunch of close games. Their secondary defense was so good with Jim Leavitt. It's funny that like beating Colorado was like this massive thing, and what was something that propelled Washington to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a weird situation there. But, so they're over-under is 5. Again, I feel maybe a little bit of an under, but, again, another great feel one way or the other.
It feels very pushy.
Yeah, it does. There's several teams. It's hard. A lot of these 5-6 win totals, they're average for a reason. It's like I don't really know. They could go 7-5. They could go 4-8. Like, it's just there's teams. Those are the hardest teams, I think, to read. Like, I think – You touched on it earlier with like Oregon State. It's almost easier to get a read on the teams that are really bad or expected to be really good. A team that could be really good in a few years, but I don't know its time quite yet, is UCLA. So the Chip Kelly experiment's underway. This is clearly not the roster that Chip Kelly dreams of at night when he starts thinking about running that high-powered offense. But this is what he has to deal with. They've recruited well in some years past, lost some of those big recruits over the years too. What do you make of UCLA with Chip Kelly trying to begin the rebuild in Westwood?
He's going to need a quarterback, whether it's Walton Spate or the freshman starting. Once he gets his quarterback set, I think you're going to see offensively some things that they're like. It's funny, their backs a couple of years ago had a really good year, and then last couple of years, they're one of the worst teams in the country running the ball last year, which was really, really disappointing. I think their defense could potentially carry them for a while. I think they got some talent on that defense with Metters and Jalen Phillips and on the Holmes and some of those guys. If you run down their schedule, you figure you beat Cincinnati, you beat Fresno, you probably win at Colorado. You got Arizona at home. Maybe you can win at Arizona State. You might be able to sneak 6 games, but if you look at run down the ESPN FPI metrics, which kind of does an algorithm for the schedule, they got the toughest schedule in the country, mainly because there are no real automatic gimme wins other than the they don't draw Oregon State, which is a really poor heel from the North.
Yeah.
You can make a case for them to potentially win or lose some of their games. So, while I'm, again, my heart from being friendly with Chip and working with Chip and knowing Chip, I'd love to see him get to six. It could be a little bit hard for him to get to six, but you never know. If they can bounce back from the Oklahoma game and beat Fresno State and then beat Colorado, and maybe they're sitting at 3-1 before the Washington game, maybe they can sneak 3 wins out of the rest of the year. But my if I had to go, if it's still 5.5, my gut instinct would be to lean towards the under in year one.
What makes you think that the defense can carry them? Because I'm looking at the numbers here. They were dead last in total defense last year in the Pac-12, next to last in scoring defense. So you've said a stat before that I think is really, really smart, and it's not necessarily about returning players but returning production. I mean, do you think that this defense – what makes you think that they could take a step forward this year?
I think they've had some injuries in the past. I think the constant turnover that they've had on that staff, I think there might have been a little bit of a, I don't want to say a culture issue, but there just might have been some issues behind the scenes that may have led to their production slipping. I think Chip has brought in some coaches on the defensive side of the ball that will be very instrumental on toughening up and motivating this team. So I'm expecting just kind of between that and just the there's no way they can be that bad again this year. I think the defense right now will be the strength of the team. You lose Rosen and you lose the receiver. Offensively, I think it's going to be a little bit before the offense catches up to the defense.
Yeah. So I look at a team that has really no idea what it really is going to get out of its quarterback at all. They've got some young talent on the offensive side. Running game has struggled, though, like you said, for the last couple of years. So-so Jumabo, crazy he's already a senior. I remember that guy was being recruited, but he hasn't had the career that I think he expected to have or UCLA expected him to have. I just don't think, look, as great as Chip Kelly is, he's the type of coach that needs to have guys that fit his system, and I think in a year or two he will. But I actually see this team being a disappointment this year. I would like the under here. I think that given that really brutal schedule that you mentioned, I think it's going to be hard for them to get to 6 wins. I feel better about them winning 3 or 4 than I do them winning 6 or 7. I just think they're more likely to fall a little bit short of that. But
yeah, but, definitely 7 for sure. I think 7 is going
to
be hard.
Yeah, so if I'm basically betting on them having to get to 6 as the only realistic way to hit the over, I personally don't feel great about it. But I think eventually UCLA is going to be in great shape. I mean, Chip Kelly clearly proven that he can do that.
It's funny. I was having a conversation with a buddy before out here in Vegas, and I said a great segment idea, a great little piece would be just to kind of, when you're isolating schedules, kind of teams that you'd much rather play later than early, or vice versa. Teams you'd much rather play earlier than later. Like UCLA is a team, you want to play them earlier.
Right.
Northwestern is a team you're going to want to play earlier. Well, of course, Purdue's a team you're going to want to play earlier. Virginia Tech's probably a team you're going to want to play earlier. Nebraska's a team you're going to want to play earlier.
Right.
All those teams that, for some reason, whether it was turnover, coaching change, they're going to be so much tougher and better later in the year. The teams, I think, that are going to play teams like that earlier in the year are going to be at an advantage.
That's a great point. Maybe there's some value to be found there fading those teams that have talent but have, you know, some question marks that might hold them back in September. I buy that. Let's go to Cal. Cal's at 6.5. Now, Cal kind of had a sneaky good year last year. Justin Wilcox came in and I think outperformed most anybody's expectations. I mean, they won 5 games, but his program was in rough shape before he got there. They returned 10 starters on offense. They get a fairly manageable non-conference. They play a decent UNC team at home. And then BYU is down Idaho State. So they could feasibly get to 3-0 right out of the gate. And then it's a matter of can they win 4 games in the Pac-12 to hit that over. So 6.5 is the total for Cal. What do you think?
I would go over. If you look at some of the losses that they had last year, were brutal. They easily could have won at Stanford. Easily could have won at UCLA. The job Wilcox did, you mentioned, was unbelievable. He put together a really, really good coaching staff. DeRuiter did a great job with that defense. And you're right. FBI numbers have the Bears as a dog at only 3 games.
Wow.
It'll be curious to see if they do start 3-0 and they got Oregon at home in that fourth game, that could be a very exciting game, and a lot could be on the line for Cal in terms of getting potentially the 7 or 8 wins. Our numbers like them at over 7 wins. I want the Stanford Steve loves Cal this year. It's not just Stanford homerism where he's concerned about the axe maybe going across the bay. I know Robertson transfers, but they didn't have him most of last year anyway. I'm with you. I'd be over the 6.5 on the Bears.
Yeah, I like that one too. I'm with you and Stanford Steve. I mean, not only you talked about the Stanford UCLA game, they lost to Arizona in overtime by one in a thrilling game. I mean, those are three games right there that could have easily gone the other way. They could have been a 7 or an 8 win team. I think that they take that next step forward in year two under Justin Wilcox. So, and you talk about teams you want to play early. It's week 4, but getting Oregon in early or late September. Mario Cristobal in his first year. We'll talk about the Ducks in a minute, but I think Oregon's not going to be quite as good as maybe some people expect. Now, maybe I'm in the minority, but I'm a little down on Oregon. That's a winnable game at home, especially considering they're going to be coming off a bye if you're Cal. They could get off to a hot start, and then they really don't even need a whole heck of a lot down the stretch to hit that over. I think Cal is an 8-win team potentially.
Yeah, our, like I said, we projected them at 7.7 wins. And you look, is it start 3-0? You can go to Arizona and win. You can beat UCLA at home. You can win in Corvallis.
Yeah.
Probably not going to beat UW. You can win at the Palouse. You can potentially win at USC. I don't think you'll beat Stanford. Maybe you could, but then you got Colorado. There are a lot of winnable games there.
Yeah, I'm buying Cal. So Washington State's the next team. They're out of the North as well. Look, not a lot went well for Mike Leach this offseason. It seems like they're a program that's in decline now, which is crazy because Leach did such a great job to build that program up. But people have really started to sour on him, I think, a little bit, and for one reason or another. Do you think that at 6.5, what do you make of them? I mean, this is a team that won 9 games a year ago.
6.5 is an absolute under for me.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine what the team is going through with the death of their quarterback
right.
in the offseason,
right.
which is a completely – I mean, on the field, the side, whatever, that's just an awful story and an awful situation. And maybe they will play for him and to honor him and his memory and his spirit, and that could be – an emotional type season where we've seen teams rally sure. for causes before. But I think football-wise, you lose Alex Grinch, who was a massive addition to that coaching staff and
yep.
that team, what he was able to do. I mean, wasn't one the last couple of years because they had a pulse on defense.
Yep.
I think there's going to be a big problem this year. I'm not convinced that they go to Laramie right off the bat and win that game. We've seen them lose early season games in the non-conference before. You get the two weakest teams on the road. You get Oregon State, Colorado on the road. So maybe Colorado could potentially pull away. Like I said, I don't think Oregon State's gonna beat them, but maybe Colorado beats Wazoo in Boulder. I think it's gonna be really, really hard for them to get to 7, even to get to 6.
Yeah,
I'm down on Wazoo this year.
Yeah, I am too. I think it's going in the wrong direction. I could actually see Mike Leach leaving after this season. I think it's gone that far
well,
south that quickly.
He's been trying to get out of there for a couple of years now. No one seems to want to hire him.
So. I know. Well, that's very true. It may not be his decision if Washington State, if things go that badly this year. Who knows? But Utah at 7. We'll go quickly through the Utes. So what do you make of Utah? I do a lot of radio hits in Salt Lake City, and boy, they love the Utes this year. I don't know that they're going to contend for the South, but how do you feel?
I know our recent pod that we did with when Brock Ewart came on and broke down the Pac-12. He's very high on Utah. He thinks Utah could potentially win the Pac-12 South, but he's just not sure on USC yet. If you look at Utah's schedule as well, they get Washington at home, and they really have given the Huskies a ton of trouble lately. They get USC at home. They get Oregon at home. All those big games against some crossover opponents, they get in Rice Eccles, and that is a nasty, difficult place to play.
Mm-hmm.
What's their total?
Right now, I see them at 7.
Seven seems like it's a big difference. 7, yeah. I would certainly take the over because I think 7-5 is the worst case scenario for
yeah.
them. I think there's a really good chance they could get to 8 because I think if you look at Washington, Arizona, USC, Oregon at home. I think there's a really good chance to get at least 2 of those teams in an upset type win. I think they'll win at Arizona State. I think they'll win at Colorado. I think they can win at Wazoo. I think the Utes are an 8-win team. I'd be over on Utah because I like what they were offensively with Tyler Huntley last year before he went down.
Yeah, big question for them, though, is having to replace Darren Carrington at receiver. I mean, he came in as a transfer last year and just breathed life into that offense. So having to replace him on the outside, it has me a little concerned. But like you, I see this as like a 7-5 floor. I mean, to have that line at 7, it's like I don't really think Kyle Whittingham's going to let this team fall back to a 6 or even, of course, a 5-win team. They're going to go bowling. I think it's a safe play to take the over because I think at worst you're looking at a push with 7 wins. Tyler Huntley is a good player, and they've got enough talent. I just don't think that – I'm not with Brock Huard and some other people who think that they can actually win. I think they can upset a team like Washington in week 3, but if you ask me can they consistently win week in and week out and hit that 9-10 win plateau, I'm not sure I'm willing to go that far.
I agree with that. But again, the first thing that you said, 7 – anything under 7 would be a real surprise to me.
Yeah.
And I'm very big on trying to find numbers that the worst case scenario is going to be a push, but there's a pretty good chance that you'll wind up winning. And like I said, at six and a half. I think 7 wins is a really good play.
Yeah, it feels the same way to me. How about the Fighting Kevin Sumlins, Arizona Wildcats? They're 7.5 right here. What do you think?
I don't know what to expect from Summy's team in year one. I'm really curious to see how Khalil Tate and J.J. Taylor and those guys play in his offense year one. Typically, right off the bat, he's been pretty successful offensively. A lot of people we talked about, like Brock being high on Utah as a sleeper in the Pac-12 South. A lot of people high on Utah. On Arizona. They don't get Washington. They don't get Stanford, which is a big deal. I could see anything from 6 wins to 10 wins, and that's a team that is an absolute no play for me.
I they're a no play for me too, and it's because, like you said, I think Khalil Tate. Can he be that good again? Like, can he really do everything? Like, is he going to run for 300 yards in a game? Is he going to run for 250 yards in another game? Like, yes, it was electrifying and it was outstanding. And Kevin Sumlin seems like the perfect coach to run that kind of offense with Khalil Tate. But I just wonder how repeatable it is. I mean, it's Arizona. I mean, how it's very rare that you see them. They don't have the type of talent as some of the other teams in that conference.
Especially defensively.
Exactly. And that's... that makes me nervous. So I stay away from it because Kevin Sumlin, I think, was a terrific hire at Arizona. I think he's going to do a great job. I thought that a lot of reasons why things went south at A&M, some of it was under Sumlin, and I think it was a lot of stuff off the field, just the way he managed the staff, the boosters, and things like that. If he can kind of learn from those mistakes at Arizona, I actually think he could build a pretty good program there, and he's got a great quarterback to kind of jumpstart the program, the rebuild. But, yes, I'm just nervous because, yeah, I think they could blow past this over and hit 10 wins, but I could also see Khalil Tate falling back to the mean a little bit, teams figuring him out, understanding how to defend him, game plan for him, and Arizona really sputtering on that side of the ball. And like you said, they're going to have trouble slowing anybody down. They were one of the worst defenses in the Pac-12 last year in the country. Bear, let's move on to Stanford. So we got just a few teams left. Stanford is over-under is 8, which seems low for a Stanford team, but they do have Bryce Love. We know about Bryce Love. They also have a talented quarterback in KJ Costello, who kind of battled for that job last year and finally looks like he's going to be the man, Keller Chris now at Tennessee. So what do you make of Stanford? Can Bryce Love carry this to an over all by himself?
Yes, I think he can. If you look at what they've done under David Shaw, I mean, very rarely – they fail to win 9 games. And I know they're not going to lose to San Diego State for the second straight year. That's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. They get a USC early in the year, and maybe J.P. Daniels hasn't fully ready for that job. Or Maybe you can throw some things at him after basically prepping for the entire offseason for him. And maybe they get them at a good time. I'm not convinced that they don't go to Oregon and they don't win. I use a lot of don'ts there. I'm not convinced that they lose at Oregon. I think it's probably a better way of saying that.
Yeah.
I think they go to Notre Dame and very easily can win that game. They get Utah at home, which is great. They got to go to Washington, which is kind of their house of horrors. They got blown out a couple of years ago up there in a really bad spot on their schedule. But I trust David Shaw. I trust his coaching staff. I trust Bryce Love. I love KJ Costello as a quarterback and what I think he can be this year. I think Holder coming back healthy is a big deal for this defense. If you can find 8 on Stanford, I'd be over in a heartbeat. Yeah, I'd go over 8.5 as well.
Yeah.
But if you find an 8 and you have to lay a little bit more juice, there's no way they're going 7-5. And 7-5 just doesn't happen for David Shaw at Stanford. 8-4, worst case scenario. I think 9-3 is worst case scenario. I see no way they don't win 8 games. And I'm over on Stanford. And if you can find some decent odds on them to potentially make the playoff, I think that could be worth a play as well.
I'm kind of buying what you're selling there, Barry. You think about, though, all the years that Stanford wins less than 8 games under David Shaw. Oh, wait, they never lose less than 8 games under David Shaw. This team hasn't won fewer than 8 games since 2008, which was the year 2 of the Harbaugh rebuild. I mean, they have cranked out 9, 10, 11 win seasons every year for the last decade. Why would they fall back this year with probably the best running back in the country and a quarterback in Costello who only threw for 1,500 yards last year, split some time, finally won that job? Costello is a future NFL quarterback. He has got all the tools that you want. He was an elite prospect out of high school. They've got Arcega Whiteside at receiver. I mean, they've got a ton of talent on this team. And I trust David Shaw to figure out the defense as well. This to me feels like an easy over. And I don't think Bryce Love is going to win the Heisman. Not to say that I don't think he's going to be one of the best players in college football. There's all sorts of reasons why Stanford running backs don't win the Heisman. But I think that Stanford, like you said, they're a dark horse national championship contender. The big one is going to be going on the road to Washington late in the year. But that doesn't really come into play as far as the over total. That's more along the lines of, can they win the Pac-12? Can they make it to the national title game? So that Washington game is the one to circle. But I love Stanford as well.
Exactly. Caden Smith and Scooter Harrington are absolute mismatches at tight end as well.
Yep, and that sounds like Stanford. So we got just a couple more, Bear. USC, Oregon, and then, of course, Washington. So let's touch on Oregon real quick. How do you feel about the Ducks in year one under Mario Cristobal?
I am not an Oregon believer. I a lot of people are high on Oregon. One of the casinos out here, I'm in Las Vegas right now. I know South Point had an Oregon win total at 9. And I think Oregon's going to be hard-pressed to win 10 games. And it's one of those numbers where I think 9-3 is the absolute best-case scenario for Oregon. So I wouldn't anticipate losing that if I played Oregon under 9. I think last year, early in the year, those great offensive numbers with Justin Herbert at quarterback, I think some of that was you're playing some terrible defenses in Cal, Southern Utah, Nebraska, Arizona State. Then you lose him. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I'm not a fan of teams that lobby. We want Mario Cristobal as our head coach. This is the guy we want. And you get him. You get your quarterback back for the bowl game. Freeman and other guys decide to sit out the bowl. And then you go out and lay an absolute egg against Boise in the Vegas Bowl. Mm-hmm. Again, maybe I'm reading too much into that. I don't want to overreact to an exhibition game result, but you would think if they really wanted this guy to be the head coach, you would have gone out and played. I think defensively, even with Jim Levitt back, he's probably holding out, waiting to see what happens with Bill Snyder at Kansas State for a head coaching job potentially.
Yeah.
I'm not sold on Oregon. I think 8-4 is much more likely than 10-2.
Yeah, the thing that makes me a little nervous is they have maybe the easiest non-conference schedule in America. They play Bowling Green, Portland State, and San Jose State. I mean, they are easily going to cruise to 3-0. So now you're saying, well, I mean, to hit that 8.5 over, 6-3 in the Pac-12 doesn't sound crazy, but I also don't love Oregon. I mean, I don't think that you hit on it exactly with, you know, they're kind of padding their stats early in the year against some bad defenses. Then you lose Herbert. I like Herbert. I don't think Herbert is as great as maybe some people are making him out to be. Levitt is a terrific defensive coordinator. But to me, I didn't love the Mario Cristobal hire. It just didn't inspire me a lot. I think he's a tremendous recruiter. He's been a part of some great staffs here in the last few years. But I just don't know that that was the hire that they really should have made. I thought there were some other guys out there who made more sense for them. But I don't know. I do want to go quickly through the other teams. I don't want to keep you too long. So we've got USC and of course, Washington. So the favorites in each division. USC is sitting at an 8.5. And you mentioned the name JT Daniels earlier. He's the new quarterback. Get to know him. He's going to be the guy for the next 3 years for the Trojans. Do you think that he can come in and make that immediate impact and maybe make some Trojan fans forget about Sam Darnold pretty quickly?
I think he can. I'm a little bit higher on USC than most people are this year. I don't think they're a 10-2, 11-1 type team, but I see a path to 9-3 for this team. I think they can go to Austin week 3 and win. I don't think they'll go to Stanford and win. But you look at the schedule, the way they don't get Washington from the north, they don't get Oregon from the north. It breaks down pretty nicely for them, where even if they were to potentially lose both those same games, Stanford, Texas, you're going to have to lose another couple of games to not win 9. I like the talent on defense. I love Stephen Carr at running back. I love Vaughn's in his sophomore year. I think he's going to have a huge year. They're going to need better offensive line play, but I think the defense will be able to carry USC for a good part of this year. So at 8.5, if I had to make a play on USC, I would go over, thinking 9-3.
Yeah.
It's probably a likely result for USC.
You know, the logic that I use here is I see that Stanford and Texas in back-to-back weeks, and I say, well, you know, if they start 1-2, can they really rebound? But that's kind of what they did a couple years ago.
Yep.
And so Clay Helton has been in this position before as the head guy, and then even as an interim, like, he has done a really good job of bouncing back after slow starts. So maybe that helps them out. I mean, they get a pretty manageable Pac-12 schedule, especially in the beginning. I mean, Washington State, Arizona, Colorado, Utah, Arizona State, Oregon State. I mean, they don't play another really – gosh, I mean, they don't really play a lot of tough games. Like Utah on the road. Utah on the road is going to be a tough one. And then, of course, Notre Dame at the end of the season. I think, to me, though – I don't think it's a 10-win team. I think 9's the ceiling. I'll stay away from it because I can see them going 1-2 and sliding down the stretch. But again, Clay Helton has shown he can. If anybody can bounce back, it's him. But the last team that we want to talk about, Bear, is Washington. So this is the team. I think they're carrying the flag for the Pac-12. They're the one who can make the playoff. They're really the only one, in my estimation, that's even a threat to make it. We know they play Auburn in week 1. That's the big one. Their win total here, as I see it sitting, is at 10.5. So you pretty much, you got 11-1 or you got 12-0 to hit the over. Do you think that's possible?
It's a no play for me because the first game is so key.
Yeah.
You lose that game and then you have to run the table on the Pac-12 to cash the over. I mean, I think they can lose to Stanford. If I had to play it, I would go to the over because I think that defense with Taylor Rapp and Gaines and Burke Kerber are going to be really, really good. And I think Browning will have a bit. Well, Browning's not an elite NFL type of guy. I think he'll have a better year than he did last year. He's going to need his receivers to step up and play better than they did last year. He had a lot of – he didn't have any help from the receivers last year in a lot of instances. And you lose Dante Pettis, who's really the only guy you can rely on. You lose a tight end as well, who's a big loss. Be curious to see what happens week 1, that offensive line against a really good SEC defense. We've seen Washington kind of getting pushed around the last couple of years in bowl games by some really good defenses. So if I had to go, if you forced me to go to the window, I would play the over. But ideally, I would think worst-case scenario, you lose to Auburn and you lose one game in the Pac-12 like they did a couple of years back when they wanted to make the playoff.
Mm-hmm. So I'm actually going to play the under here. I think Auburn gets them in week 1. Like you said, they've struggled in those games against the big boys. Auburn, I think, is plenty capable of knocking them off in what's essentially going to be a home game for Auburn in Atlanta. And then you're asking me if they can run the table in the Pac-12. They haven't done that the last couple of years. So they play Stanford at home. But I think that there's going to be some teams in there that are going to give them some trouble. They go on the road to Utah in week 3. I actually think Utah might get them in week 3. And then if they lose to Auburn and then lose to Utah, you've cast your under, and it's not even halfway through September. So this is, I think, a tricky enough schedule for me where I would lay them going under. And look, I love Chris Peterson. Would it shock me if Washington went 12-0? No. But I think that safer play actually is the under. Like you said earlier, it's like, you feel it's hard to bet those overs on those high totals because it's just so hard to be perfect or even to win 11 games. And Washington's got a tough task ahead of it by opening the season against Auburn. So if they win that game, you'd feel a hell of a lot better about them going hitting the over. But I think that Auburn gets them, and that makes me feel good about giving them maybe 10 wins at the most. So, all right, Bear, well, I kept you a little longer than I wanted to. You got a massage to get to in Vegas, and I'd hate to force you to miss that, my man.
Yeah, we've had it. We're getting ready for a long season, so it's a little bit of R&R before we get going. So we're looking forward to that, and looking forward to a great weekend out here to kick it off. It should be fun.
You deserve it, man. And hey, what's the deal with Beyond the Bets, real quick? So let my listeners know, because I'm sure they'd love more good content. Love to hear more of you. So what's your guys' plan for that podcast this year?
Yeah, Wednesdays Behind the Bets, Stanford Steve and I will give you all the info you need. Usually it'll drop around 5 o'clock Eastern or so. Is ideally when we're looking at posting. So we'll be posting around this Wednesday afternoon. We'll hopefully try and get up a little bit earlier than we have in the past. But I would say between 4 and 5 would be the safest bet.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for joining me, man. I appreciate it. I'm sure I'll have you on again before the season's over if I can find the time. So enjoy UMass and Duquesne on Saturday. I'm sure you'll be streaming it.
As someone who gave out Wyoming over 6.5 wins on Behind the Bets, I will be hopefully enjoying Wyoming and New Mexico State. That's a big game.
It's a big one for all of us. Man, I appreciate that, Bear. Best of luck, man. You're one of the good ones. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care, bud.
All right, Barrett. I'll enjoy, man. I'll see you. We'll talk soon for sure.
Definitely. Absolutely.
All right, buddy.
All right, boss. I'll see you.
Bye. All right. Thanks to Barrett and Chris Felica for joining me to preview the Big 12 and Pac-12. Hope you guys enjoyed the episodes. Next up, I'll have Peter Burns from the SEC Network to preview the SEC. We talked for about a half hour earlier this week, and that episode will be coming out tomorrow. So make sure to tune in for that. We get into all the big names in the SEC, over-unders, previewing the entire conference. It's going to be a great episode. You're not going to want to miss it. And Peter, one of the best guests we could possibly have. So keep an eye out for that. Hope you guys enjoyed this one, the Big 12 and the Pac-12. More to come, guys. Don't forget, also, follow me on Twitter at Josh Parcell. Also, you can follow me on WFNZ. Don't forget, you can also follow me on WFNZ every day in Charlotte, 102.5 FM, 610 AM. A lot of Panthers talk, but we get into plenty of college football as well. I'm excited for the season, guys. We're only a couple days away now. You can taste it. The first college football Saturday is upon us, and I'm just excited to get some of these stories that have just taken over the offseason, stories like Ohio State, in the rearview mirror. And at least from a fan point of view, let's just watch some football. Let's see the games. And let's have some fun again and remember what makes this sport so great. So thanks again for listening. Keep an eye out for Peter Burns coming up. Also, Kevin McGuire on Friday for Big Ten. And, of course, Rossi Three Stacks will be back to talk about the return of daily fantasy college football. Praise the Lord, it's back. It's something Ross and I love to do every single weekend, and we're going to make you love it with us. We'll also give you our picks for the weekend and the recurring segment, Take the Point. So keep an eye out for all that stuff. Until then, guys, be good. Get ready for the games. See you later.